yourself?
I'm Dan McNeil. I'm one of the directors of engineering at Comply Advantage, and I look after about half of our development team.
Fabulous. So obviously we are looking at keeping connectivity within a hybrid world and high performing teams within a hybrid world. So for Comply Advantage and yourself, what does a return to work look like for you?
A return to work is something that actually at the time of recording we've actually started. So we've started opening up our locations around the world as government regulations change, saying that people can come in if they have a need to come in. So we're still encouraging people not to travel on public transport if they don't need to. But we're saying if you have something you need to be in the office for, or you have somebody who you want to have a conversation with that you can't have remotely, you know, there might be difficult conversations, there might be meeting new starters, we are opening the office up for that kind of thing. I think that's going to be the future for us. I don't think we will go back to an environment where we have a desk for everybody and we expect that unless somebody says otherwise, they're sitting at their desk.
Yeah.
I think it will be more of a world where we have office space available in all of our locations so that people can go in. And it's not just if they want to meet other people. I mean, for me personally, I found myself much more relaxed going into the office. I was much less stressed about things, just getting out on the street, grabbing a coffee, walking down the street to the office. When I'm in London, I'm fortunate enough to be able to walk to the office. So that's quite nice. You know, it's quite a safe way to get to work. The other thing that I can see happening, and actually some teams have started doing this, is I can see teams getting together when they want to as a team. So if there's a new project coming up, the team might get together as a team to kick off that project. And, you know, weather hasn't been great the past few days, but when it's been sunny over the past few weeks, we've had teams, and obviously agile teams small enough to obey the rule of six.
Yeah.
We've had teams grabbing a takeaway, sitting on the grass a distance apart in the park, and talking about how they're going to tackle a project in the park. I think a lot more of that kind of stuff will start happening. There are some people who want to go into the office every day, and that's also fine. But I think we did a survey at work before kind of sizing the office space that we have for this. We did a survey to work out approximately how many people are going to be in. And the most common answer was people saying they do one day a week in the office. That was the most common answer. But some people said five, some people said none, but most common answer was one day a week.
Wow. So do you find that obviously with you having this hybrid approach and some people being in, some people being not, that you'll think there'll be a scale down of offices?
Absolutely. Because I think this is, we're not unique in taking this approach. You know, we've seen the tech giants, some of them have been putting off their decision and, you know, saying, right, we'll make a decision in September. We're expecting everybody back in September. And then I think Google have recently changed their mind on that. We have to remain competitive in the marketplace, and we couldn't hire developers if we said you have to be at a desk 5 days a week when other companies aren't saying that. I think it would be, imagine if we said we're hiring developers, but you must be at your desk 9 to 5 and take an hour for lunch and you don't have flexible hours around that. That would sound so outdated. And I think it's already starting to sound outdated to say, you know, on a job advert, if somebody says, well, it's remote during the pandemic, but once things return to normal, you'll be back in the office 5 days a week. Most people will skip over that. And I think pure economics means that if you say that 20 or 30% of your working population will be in the office every day, why would you pay for 100% office space, especially in somewhere like central London, where, you know, saving 70% of your desk space, saving 70% of your office budget can be millions of pounds a year.
Yeah, totally. But on the flip side of that, what would you do when there is more heads wanting to come into the office than desk space available?
What we're doing actually is we are going through an experimental phase at the moment. I think you can never rule it out completely.
Yeah.
I think you have to have some contingency, and our contingency is that we currently have a private area within a co-working space. And people who are members of the co-working space have access to the communal areas as well. So if we had overflow, we could go and use one, you know, a couple of people could go and sit in the communal areas just for a day. We also have access, obviously, to things like meeting rooms and other contingent space we can book. But for me, I think it's about experimentation. It's about running with this, having a good guess, like we've done now, then running with it and saying, how does this pan out? Approximately how many people do come in? We're also asking people to say in advance when they come in. Yes. Realistically, if somebody turns up at the office door and hasn't booked, we're not going to have, you know, a bouncer standing there saying, your name's not down, you're not coming in. But we're generally saying, if you know when you're coming into the office, just put your name down on the list. And there's 20 spaces per day. You know, if we've got 20 desks, 20 spaces per day. And we're finding people are doing that. And we haven't yet run into a problem. We've only opened the office space back up formally in the past week or so. And there's more people coming in. But people tend to be coming in groups. They tend to be coming in as a team. Tends to be a team say, we'll come in today. And I can imagine they won't necessarily take desks. They might get a meeting room and go around a whiteboard or go around a screen to look at something on the screen. Unfortunately, the space we have has meeting rooms big enough to maintain social distancing with a lot of people. There's some seriously big meeting rooms. So I think for me, it's about having the contingency to deal with it tactically, but monitoring the situation strategically. And if you're constantly having to deal with it tactically, maybe you need a little bit more space. On the flip side, if constantly half of your desks are empty, you can probably turn that space into a breakout area or put sofas in or something.
Yeah, totally agree. And how do you feel that that kind of model, the hybrid aspect, will see the kind of everyday work conversations, such as the water cooler and ICT conversations?
I think they have. They've switched to IM clients a bit. I mean, we use Slack and people do tend to have many more casual Slack chats going. You know, it used to be in the office, you'd send somebody a Slack when you wanted something or they wanted something.
Yeah.
And now it's a lot less transactional. It might just be, hello, how are you doing? Not spoken to you in a week. What I found going into the office as well is you don't always meet the same people on every day in the office. So I'm in the office generally Wednesdays and Thursdays, and every week I've been in Wednesday and Thursday, which I think now is 4 weeks, there's been a different set of people in. And last week, for instance, I went in to meet a new team member who hasn't started yet, but to whom we've made an offer. We went and had lunch outside with him. And I just randomly bumped into somebody from our customer success team who I'd not seen in a year because she happened to be in the office. So they are happening. I think that they will be less frequent, but when they do happen, they tend to be longer conversations, because if you've not seen somebody for months, you'll tend to have a more meaningful interaction than if you saw them yesterday and you just kind of nod and walk past. But I think that as we move to the hybrid model, we have to keep conscious of including people who aren't in the office, because now that we're moving to this hybrid model, we're actually starting to employ some people who aren't based in London at all. You know, people who aren't even based commutably to London.
Yeah.
You know, initially when we thought, well, we won't be in the office every day, some people were coming in as candidates who are a little bit further afield, where the commute is maybe too long to do every day, but you could do it once a week. Now we're actually finding ourselves making offers to candidates who are in Sheffield or Edinburgh, because it really doesn't matter. Yeah. And I think that it's important to ensure that if the team gets into an informal discussion, they think about the people that aren't there. But frankly, that was always true. If I bump into somebody from another team in the kitchen, I'm unlikely to come to a conclusion or change strategy or change team structure with them. I'm likely to just have an idea, and then that idea goes back into more processy channels to get followed through. So I think the same thing will happen. We just need to be mindful not to exclude people because they're remote, but we'd still take things to the same formal channels to make a decision or to, you know, change something or throw in an idea.
Yeah, fab. And so kind of touching on that excluding aspect, how would you, or how would Comply Advantage, or how would you suggest that we stop biases in this hybrid world to those that aren't obviously central London for yourself or in the office all the time?
I think the thing that helps us here, the thing that's in our favour, is that I don't think many people will be in the office all the time.
Yep.
So I think they will be the minority. So I think that what we've seen back in the before times, as I call them, people used to say, "Oh, you at home today?" And that was the question. So that was the exception. Whereas now, our office is back open. People have been saying, "You in the office today?" As if home is the norm and in the office is the exception. And I think if we do see 20% of the population in the office, that will be, you know, that will remain. And the people who are in the office every day will be analogous to the people who previously were out of the office every day and worked from home every day. And you kind of knew those people were at home every day. So for me, I'm not particularly concerned about people getting left out day to day. And I would say if a team gets together once a quarter to kick off the quarter, well, frankly, we can afford the train fare and the hotel for people who are remote to come to London and join in that if they can. Now, you will have people who, for family reasons or other life reasons, can't travel. But again, that's going to be pretty rare. You know, I don't think we should solve for the very rare cases. We can solve those on an individual basis. So far, I've seen some new teams in my organization form during lockdown, where the members of the teams have literally never met each other and they're doing some great work. So it is possible to create these new teams and build the new teams without that. I must say I am also seeing working relationships sometimes take a little bit longer to establish. You know, we've had quite a few new people in leadership positions at Comply, including myself. I only started 10 weeks before lockdown. And we found, you know, myself with other people, we found that we're not establishing the trust and the working relationship that you have to establish with everybody new you work with. It's not happening as quickly. And I had a conversation with somebody in the office a couple of weeks ago, and we'd seen each other a bit during lockdown, you know, in those weird periods where you're allowed to meet up for coffee. And I think in an hour of sitting in a communal space with a coffee, we covered about 3 months of ground in terms of stuff, that in terms of building the relationship and sharing ideas. And it felt so much more open.
Yeah. Yeah. So with that kind of aspect, how would you ensure the company values and ethos remain the same throughout that kind of that geographical spread of everyone working remotely and within a hybrid world?
So I think that the company values that we have, that we do actually hold very true, are things such as being collaborative, being agile, being tenacious, being curious, being humble, being human. You can still do all those things on a video call. You can still have a personality on a video call. You can still have a bit of levity when appropriate. You can still even do the hard conversations remotely. So I think that because we all live and breathe what we believe as a company, actually that comes through in the remote communications as well. You can still maintain transparency. You can't maintain transparency with the team by crowding everybody into a big meeting room and standing at the front and saying, "Look, I've got some news to share." But you can create transparency by getting everybody on a Zoom call and having everybody's cameras on and having your own camera on. There's little things like that. I feel it's a much more open conversation when the other person has the camera on. And that's a rule we instigated quite soon at Comply, which is unless there's a good reason not to, have your camera on during all video calls. Because otherwise, I could be doing anything. You know, I could be staring out the window. I could be walking around the house. I could be cooking dinner.
Yeah.
I think it shows that the other person has your attention in a way that if you were face to face with somebody, if you were staring down at your phone playing Candy Crush, that would be rude. But you could do that on a video call without somebody knowing, but it doesn't make it any less rude.
Yeah, I could totally agree. And I think obviously having that camera on aspect, it adds that personality again. So apart from the cameras on, how else would you ensure that your team have that feeling of being connected?
I think over communication is key. you can't rely on the fact that people will just talk to each other and know stuff. So I tend to, team meetings, I was having them before the pandemic, and I'm still having a full team meeting once a month. I'm still sharing the slides. I'm still we have a team Slack channel for everybody on the team. Every time I say something important or there's something important, I'll say it in that channel so that everybody knows this thing. I think it's also important when new people join and when people leave, because they do, you know, this is a business. People have both joined and left during the pandemic. Normally, you might not send a round robin email. You might, at the team meeting, say, actually, this person, he or she's decided to leave us to go elsewhere to do whatever. I think you need to find another way to do that. And it's not always just a case of a video call, because that can be, you know, a 5-minute video call to say somebody's leaving can be a bit weird. So it maybe you use Slack, maybe you do resort to an email. I think the other thing for me is I always acknowledge how strange the situation is. I think a year in, we've got used to it. You know, I don't think anything of seeing people wearing face masks in Sainsbury's now, whereas a year ago I would have thought, what's going on there? I think we need to retain the context that this is still weird in the context of our entire lives. It's been a very weird year. And in the context of the past year, today is not particularly weird. But in the context of the rest of our lives, it is. And so to say to people, look, this feels a bit weird doing this over video. I'd like to do this face to face. But I still say that after a year, because we all know it's video. We all know we don't really have a choice. But just to say, look, I'm not delivering this news over video because I can't face you or because I'm hiding something. I'm delivering this news over video because that's all I'm allowed to do currently.
Yeah.
And we're arranging a lot of company events. We've continued with our, we call them Eat and Educate sessions, which is, you know, we get external speakers or internal speakers to do a talk for about an hour. And I'm very involved with setting up the LGBTQ plus ones. We've still continued those through the time when we're all at home. And yes, it's a bit weird that you have somebody sitting in the living room going, hello, today I'm going to talk to you about trans inclusion. You're like, yes, that's something we would normally expect to see in a, you know, a speaking space where we'd all be together. But actually, I think there's things we can take from this pandemic that we can keep. Because not everybody can get to that space, especially when we're talking about inclusion. Not everybody is able to travel to the space where an event is happening. Not everybody is comfortable in the space where an event is happening. So actually, by normalizing the fact that video is a legitimate way to communicate, we might end up being more inclusive at the end of this pandemic than we were when we went in.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think you kind of touched on something then about mentioning that, at the moment you say, obviously I'd love to do this face-to-face, but at the moment I can't. When there is some form of normality, however long that be away, hopefully it's sooner rather than later, but when the social distancing has been eradicated and normality as we previously knew it is back, how would you then address that kind of, I'd love to have this conversation face-to-face aspect within that hybrid model?
I think I would probably do it as face-to-face as I can. So it would still be online, but for those people who are in the office, I'd come into the office. And if it's something that's known about in advance, I would, in the invite, say, I'm going to be delivering this in person in meeting room X in the office. Would be great to see you there so we can meet in person. If you can't make it, it will be on video as well. So I don't want to make the people who can't make it feel lesser in any way. But I want to give the opportunity for people who do value the face-to-face interaction to get that interaction by warning them and saying, going to be doing this thing. Be great if you could come into the office. The other thing to remember is we are a global company as well. So I think once in the life of the company, and this was before I started, the entire company got together for a few days. But that's expensive, and that's expensive both in terms of travel and in terms of time lost on other stuff. You know, that's really logistically difficult. So for a global company, there's always going to be somebody on the end of a video call.
Yeah.
And that's, we've got so many cross-site teams, you know, both squads within the dev team, but also just groups of people working on projects together. most of the meetings I'm in have at least one person who's not based in the UK in them. And yes, international travel will come back someday, so I'll get to meet these people one day, but they're not going to be there for every meeting. So actually, it doesn't feel that much difference. It feels like a lot of this stuff around including people remotely, we should already have been doing anyway. And if the pandemic teaches us to catch ourselves and go, "Ooh, we should have been more inclusive in the first place," then great, let's start doing it. You know, when I was working in geographically distributed teams before, I would do things such as when we were doing round the table to say what everybody not to, don't always start with the same office. Don't always do London first and presume that this other place where there's only two people is the outpost. Sometimes time my visits to the other place, so I'm chairing the meeting from the other place. So they're not always the remote ones. You know, I like to engender a feeling on cross-site video calls that everybody's going to pop up on the call, but not necessarily from one site or the other. So somebody from London might be in, you know, take Comply Advantage, might be in Romania, might be in New York. They might pop up on the call from another location, and we should normalise that.
Yeah. Fabulous. So with that kind of normalising things, how do you feel the hybrid model will affect retrition? So kind of touching on picking up them feeling prompts, knowing when somebody's unhappy at work.
That's a difficult question. I think that it's very difficult to talk about it experientially because the past year has not been a normal year anyway. So actually, attrition at the start of the pandemic was really low because everybody just said, right, I am not going to change job now. I've got more things to worry about. I just want the salary coming in and I want me and my family to be safe. That, you know, that was people's priority. Then as we've gone through the pandemic, we've seen the job market really hot up because people have gone, actually, this model of remote working, kind of like this. This is now what I want. And I've seen in the past couple of months, the job market has really gone busier than it was before. Now, some of that might be over adjustment for all the people that wanted to move but didn't during the first lockdown because, you know, so we might be seeing some over adjustment there. But I think the same things apply. If you treat your team with respect and you give them what they need and you help them to feel empowered and challenged and valued and motivated, I don't think there's any more reason for them to leave in a hybrid world than there is in a non-hybrid world. I think that this is going to sound quite harsh, but saying that attrition went up in a business because of hybrid working sounds like a bit like an excuse. You know, people genuinely, generally don't want to change jobs if they're happy. They're just happy to carry on doing it. So if the hybrid working model gives an easier way for people to move because maybe they can apply to jobs in a wider geographical area without having to relocate, then some companies might see more attrition. But frankly, that's people who wanted to leave anyway, just couldn't because logistics were keeping them there. I don't think anything about the hybrid model will cause people to leave when they otherwise weren't going to, unless some companies don't maintain the hybrid model. I think if a company were to say, all of our developers need to be back in the office Monday and you can work from home with prior permission a couple of weeks in advance, yeah, their attrition would be high.
Fab. Okay. So with that, how is trust to be expected for remote workers, or how will this have to be managed and earned? For example, new starters.
I think to me, it very much depends how you measure people. If you measure people by how many hours they're sitting at the desk and how many times they go to the loo in a day and do they go outside for cigarette breaks and stuff, then you're not going to be able to do that. But frankly, good, because that will stop people using those methods to measure people. I think for me, I'm very lucky in that I have a very good group of managers managing the developers. And they still have weekly check-ins with people. They do still, you know, to come back to the attrition thing, they do still pick up when people happy or unhappy, or if there's something on somebody's mind. I think at first it was tougher on video, but as this has become more normalised, people are treating this as the way to communicate now. And I can tell if somebody's pissed off on a video call. I mean, maybe not as quickly as I can face to face, but you can still tell if somebody's disinterested, or if somebody looks grumpy, or if somebody's on mute and mouthing things. You know, that's quite an extreme example, but you can tell, you can still pick up on that stuff. And actually, people will still be in daily stand-ups. People will still be interacting with members of the team. And if you measure people by their contributions to the team, well, that's still all there. If you say, you know, by adding this new starter to the team, have we seen our productivity improve? Have we seen our predictability improve? Have we seen our quality improve? That's how we should have been measuring the teams in the first place. And so if we carry on measuring the teams in their way, it doesn't matter where somebody is. In fact, I find that maybe actually you can trust people more when they're at home. I know that sounds like a bit of a strange thing to say, but people have been much more open about saying, actually, I've got to pop out this afternoon. Is that okay? So I'll make it up this evening. People have been a lot more open about that kind of stuff when they're at home than when they're in the office, to be honest. I'm just finding people are very open about, I think what we've done over the past year is we pushed the work-life balance on average a bit more towards life. And so we've given permission for people to say, yeah, I've got to pop out this afternoon because I've got to pop into the school to see the headmaster about something. So that's quite a bad example. I mean, or I've got to pop out because my mother's going for a COVID jab and she's a bit nervous, so I'm going to drive her there. You know, whatever it is, I think we have just given people the permission to say, going to be offline for an hour. And I think as, you know, I've always believed it, but I think as a community, we've now learned that the world doesn't stop if somebody takes a 2-hour lunch break instead of 1 hour. It really doesn't.
Yeah. So with that kind of leads quite nicely on to the next question. So burnout. Without the commute and wind down time and people kind of taking an hour at lunch and adding it on to the end of the day, are we at further risk of accelerated burnout?
It's an interesting question. I have two views on this personally. One is I've actually found myself drifting to my laptop more at a weekend and evening than I did before the pandemic. But I found that process less stressful because it feels less like I'm committing a big thing by dedicating some of my time at home to going and taking an evening call with somebody in the US or whatever. It's just like, I'll tell my partner, right, I've got to do a work call. I'll be gone for half an hour. I'll be back in time for Strictly or whatever it is. I mean, it wouldn't be because Strictly is of a Saturday. Let's go for the sewing bee. That's during the week, isn't it? You're getting an insight into my life here. That feels fine. You know, before I come to bed, if I'll go, oh, I've got an email, I'll just reply to that while the person in the US is online. On the other hand, I don't want that to become normalised. So I do always, if I send emails at the weekend, if they're to a relatively broad audience, I'll use scheduled send for Monday morning. Not because I'm hiding the fact I'm doing something on the weekend, but I don't want that to become something that's rewarded. You know, I think the key to avoiding burnout now is the same as it ever was, is to watch out for the signs in people and don't incentivize working long hours. Incentivize being productive and having our high output and being efficient and being smart and bringing good ideas. Don't, you know, if somebody in my team said I worked a 60-hour week last week, they're not going to get praise for it. They're going to get asked why and what are we going to do to stop them ever needing to do that again.
Yeah. And it's good that you've got that mentality. And I think I've seen it myself when I receive emails. Sometimes signatures say, I work hours to suit myself. Please don't feel like you have to reply to this email if not within working hours. And that type of understanding during their email signatures. Do you think that's something that may be introduced in the long time, in the long haul for a number of companies? Or do you think that's quite rare to see that?
I think it's quite rare. I've actually never seen it. But I like the idea. But I would love, if I had a magic wand, I'd just wave the magic wand, so that's how we all thought without having to write it down. And then the other thing I do, and I'm unapologetic about this, is that when I'm on holiday from work, so if I've taken a week off, I uninstall Slack and I stop syncing emails to my phone. And everybody, but of course I'm responsive, you know, I'm not negligent. If there's a customer incident and I'm somebody who could help, then I'm going to help if I can. But the rule I have to people is, you've got my number, you can WhatsApp me if I'm needed. If it's not important to WhatsApp me, important enough to WhatsApp me about, then I'm not going to be dealing with it till I'm back. And it sounds harsh, but actually, people do sometimes WhatsApp me, but only on occasions when I'm glad they did. I'm like, okay, glad I can help with this. Or I can just, you know, even if it's just I send them a couple of messages on WhatsApp and go, right, I'd try this, or I'd talk to this person. It doesn't really inconvenience me. But equally, I think if I had Slack on my phone, the temptation would be, oh, I'll just jump on the channel then. I'm like, well, I'm not going to jump on the channel. I'll just respond to this one thing. And I've actually been encouraging other people to do that as well. I've been encouraging people in the team to say, if you're on holiday, don't reply. You know, if somebody replies to my Slack when they're away, I will say, why are you replying? Now, quite often they'll say, oh, I was just, you know, wife's out with the kids and I was bored and I was just sitting at the PC and I thought I'd check out to go, or whatever. And, you know, my response is, surely you've got better things to do. Read a book, go for a walk, talk to the dog, do something, you know. I think that the other aspect to this is it depends on people's personal circumstances. I mean, one thing we did at Comply during the pandemic, wasn't because of the pandemic, but something we switched to, is an unlimited leave policy. And we're finding people not taking much leave, to be honest. Some people are taking what I describe as a sensible amount of leave. You know, they're taking enough that you can go, right, during the year, they're going to have taken a fair amount of time off, which is good. I wonder whether the people not taking time off is because there's something about the unlimited leave policy that hasn't yet settled in with them, you know, and we need to work on that to make sure they are comfortable taking the leave. Or is it that if you live in a one-bedroom flat on your own and you're not bubbled with anyone, what are you going to do with a week off? I mean, I know from a personal point of view, I'm here with my partner and we're here together most days, because sometimes one, especially with things now opening up, sometimes one or both of us is back in London, but we're here together most of the time. But if I were on my own, talking to people on Slack and stuff, it would be, you know, it would be people to talk with. It's a group of people to be around during the day. And so I'm not sure I'd want a week off. I'm, you know, some people love the isolation. Some people would love to switch off, stare out the window, read books and not talk to anyone for a week. That's not me. And I'm sure it's not a lot of other people either. So I think we need to manage burnout and we need to encourage people to have downtime. But I'm not going to force people to take a week of holiday if what they're going to be doing is sitting there on their own feeling lonely.
Yeah. So with that, that kind of sparked a little question in my head. So without that human interaction, that kind of face-to-face aspect, can the fear of failure be supported within that hybrid world to a certain degree, or do you feel like that is something that will be hard to manage?
You mean as in, do you think people's fear of failure will be more intense?
Yes, yeah.
I think that, yes, it can be for some people. And I can speak from personal experience here. I mean, I'm the kind of person who is not very self-assured. Doesn't come across when I'm doing stuff like this, I know, but I'm not very self-assured. I'm somebody who doesn't have that little assuring voice inside the head going, you are okay, you are enough, I don't have that. So I rely on that from other people, not in a needy way, but that's kind of how I judge whether I'm doing a good job, is through other people's eyes, not my own. And that gets tougher when you're not around people, because you don't get those cues we've talked about. So I think it's easier to be sitting here on your own thinking, did I screw that up? Am I doing a good job? What does that person think of me? It is certainly easier. So I think we need to be mindful of opening up over text and video in a way that maybe we hadn't previously. You know, video was always a slightly weird medium in the past. You would never really have a deep personal conversation over video with a friend. You know, not unless you lived miles apart or whatever. And I think it's taken us a while to do that. And you, by deep personal conversations, some work conversations, even if it's not delving into somebody's personal life, which is, you know, frankly none of our business unless they want to share it, but stuff about how is somebody feeling about their own performance? How are they feeling about their place in the team? How are they feeling about their future? Are they feeling motivated? Are they feeling demotivated? They are quite personal stuff. And I think all the stuff I've said previously on LinkedIn or whatever about encouraging vulnerability, we've had to do that again on video. It's tougher to be vulnerable on video, I think, than it is to be vulnerable face to face with somebody. So, yeah, I think it can be worse. I think the other thing that can play into it is everybody has a background level of upset, concern, destabilization, anxiety, whatever you want to call it, however it's manifesting. Our emotional centers are a little bit fuller at the moment than they were before the pandemic hit. And I think it's getting better, but still, we are still, you know, when we're out and about looking at the people who aren't wearing masks, and I wish you'd wear that over your nose, you know, whatever. And if you are somebody who is lacking in self-assurance or prone to fear of failure or imposter syndrome, whatever it is, I think the fact that there's this other thing going on might actually stimulate, you know, those unhelpful thoughts within yourself anyway. I think this has been said a lot, but I think there's a second pandemic happening at the moment, and that pandemic is a mental health pandemic.
Completely.
And work is not immune from people's mental health. You know, people can, if people are feeling anxious or depressed or whatever else, that has as much a bearing on their ability to work as if they broke their wrist and can only type one-handed. You know, it will have an impact on their ability to do their job. And I think for me, it's about creating the space for people to be open about that as well. You know, it's creating the space for when, you know, we're talking about the pandemic, it's okay to say, I'm really not enjoying this. Or, you know, I'm having a bad week, I'm feeling lonely. Those things are fine to say. And as leaders, we mustn't judge that. As companies, we mustn't judge that. And as individuals, we mustn't judge that.
Fab. So finally, to finish off, has our conversation today about connectivity within a hybrid working world, has that made you think about anything in which you'd like to implement within your team that could apply advantage, or that you'd like to channel for other companies to do?
I think one thing I'd like to do within the team is, I think I'm talking from experience here. So, you know, I think I've got a bit of experience. But on the flip side, I shouldn't presume what people want. So I'm presuming that most people want face-to-face interaction. You know, it's very easy as an individual and as a human to project how I feel about something onto other people and go, well, if I don't like video, you mustn't like video either. So I think for me, talking about this subject and thinking about it more in depth, as I have, you know, during this conversation and previously, I think I want to open a conversation with the team to go, right, we've decided as a company how we're going to work. How do we want to work as a team? Within that, we have the freedom to be logistically, technologically, and, you know, personally, work as we want. We've got the framework. We know we have these offices we can go into. We know it doesn't have capacity for everybody. We know we have to reserve spaces in the office before we go in. We know that we've still got wearing masks and social distancing for a while. Given all that, how do we want to shape ourselves as a team? What do we want our normal as a team to be? And I think the one thing I'll do is use this as a catalyst to go to the team and say, right, the office is open again. How do we want to do this? How do you want me to do this? How do you want me to serve you as the leader, given that I can come into the office to meet you, but I equally don't want you to come into the office if that's not what you were going to do to meet me? I think I should canvas opinions as well as having my own.
Fab. So it's been great to chat with you, Dan, and it's been really insightful to find out how you're managing your team at Comply Advantage and what Comply Advantage are doing as a business to tackle this hybrid working world. Is there anything you would like to leave this on?
No, I think that I'd like to end on an optimistic note, which is to say we've delivered some really great stuff remotely at Comply. We've built some really great teams. We've delivered some really great stuff. We've been hitting goals. We've been hiring a lot. Still hiring, by the way. I've got to get that plug in there. and it gives me optimism that we might be going into a new world.